Welcome to the Salinger Report. Today is August 22nd, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. I'm speaking to you from Ohio. I'm on my way to Toronto this Saturday. Rob Kirby, Mark Skidmore, and Daniel Estulin and I joined 40 Salinger Report subscribers for a luncheon in Toronto. I'm very much looking forward to it. I then move on to Halifax and Cape Breton, and then to the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, and then back to Hickory Valley by sometime around September 9th or 10th. I head to Europe for another month at the end of September, and then when I get back, I'll head out to Portland. So we have an event on Friday, November 15th in Portland, and then the next event, final event of the year, will be in Malvern outside of Philadelphia on December 20th. It's Christmas, so I'm headed to Pennsylvania. Real Game of Missing Money, Volume 1 and 2. We're on the second printing. We just keep sending more hard copies. They keep flowing out the door. Please get physical copies in people's hands. If you don't want to buy the hard copies, no problem. You can print out the PDF. You can put something on a digital stick. Just take copies of the digital PDFs, but I continue to believe you want to get physical things in people's hands. So get it to your CPA, get it to your insurance company, get it to your pension fund trustees, get it to your money managers. I'm seeing much more interest in the financial people to grapple with and understand the information, and I think it's very important. It can help them tremendously. So let's just keep getting copies into people's hands and start challenging every U.S. politician and official to understand and explain FASB 56. Our theme tonight is the Feds and the fixed income markets face the fall debt wall. The Treasury and corporations have tremendous refinancing to do. The cash demands on the U.S. Treasury is significant. If you look at U.S. and Italy, they're the big yields offered in the fixed income market to the G7. Now, the long Treasury has come down significantly. So we started the year at almost 3%, and it's already down to 2.11, and it's traded through 2%. So that compares to extraordinary negative yields in the G7 away from Italy and U.S. We're now up to $17 trillion at negative yields. In fact, one Bank of America estimated $19 trillion. Germany this week did something unprecedented. They sold 30-year bonds with no coupon at a negative interest rate. So on a first issue, on an original issuance, that's the first time they've gone out at negative. Certainly their bonds have traded in the secondary at negative. But to sell sovereign bonds for 30 years with no coupon, who can imagine that kind of deflation? They borrowed almost €1 billion. So it was 824 million euros, $914 million is approximately equivalent. They are going to pay back in 2050 795 million euros. So they get 825 million, pay no coupon, get 795 million. So clearly lots more confidence in the German debt than the U.S. Reports now from Switzerland that we're seeing selective payment of mortgages put out at a negative mortgage rate. That's astonishing. It was a survey of 24 Canton banks, and two indicated that they are, in special cases, paying for loans. Of course, a couple weeks ago, I reported that there was the third largest Danish bank is now reported doing negative interest rate mortgages. So I put in the notes the Treasury yield curve to show you what it's looked like for the year and just in this recent month. But it's quite amazing. Just this month, we've dropped down from, we started the month at 2.44, and we're down to 2.11 on the long end. So, which is extraordinary and frankly is going to help trying to do all that refinancing. But there's no doubt we're in for a major crunch in the fall. And the more interest rates fall, the more it can help that crunch. The question is, where is all that liquidity going to come from? Money in markets, the dollar now up 2.43% for the year. So the dollar is strong, and that's causing, well, clearly if you've got $17 to $19 trillion of negative yielding sovereign debt, then money's pouring in to get that 2% yield on the long end. And that's pushing the dollar up, but capital is definitely coming this way. If you look at the extraordinary performance in the fixed income market, it's trading ahead of the equities. So the long Treasury ETF now up 19.93% for the year, the intermediate up 9.94%, the bond aggregate up 8.21 basis points, so 8.21, and junk flying up 11.35%. Equities, the S&P now up 18%, so that compares to a long Treasury. It's 100 basis points, it's 200 basis points less. Commodities flat, up 31 basis points, but that will show you how much steam has come out of the global economy. Gold up 16.62%. It's backed off a little bit, but again, gold clearly is in for a strong year. And silver up 9.99%, so almost 10%. And oil up 26.3%. There's lots of talk of slowdown globally and concerns about recession, but there's a lot of mixed signals, and that's because we're far from going into the typical kind of slowdown or recession. You have so much squabbling about the fundamental model, so much drain by corruption and by covert squabbles of all different kinds. The drag on the economy, it's amazing the economy is doing as well as it is, given the extraordinary drain and drag of the implementation of technocracy, the kind of cybersecurity squabbling that's going on. If you just look what our team is paying in terms of shadow work and cybersecurity, it's an enormous, enormous drain. So you're really having fundamental warring in the economy. And I think it's going to get much worse before it gets better. The Trump administration is clearly channeling the deep state this month. We, of course, see the Epstein death cause incredible skepticism from all sides of the political spectrum that there's any connection between reality and official reality. The Trump administration has asked Congress to make permanent its legal authority from the U.S. Freedom Act for NSA to gain access to logs of Americans' domestic communications. So there's, you know, a real push for complete fascistic control. We now have the president's daughter out promoting gun control. After Trump suggested that the United States buy Greenland, his visit to Denmark, who Greenland's a part of the Denmark umbrella, Denmark said they had no interest in selling Greenland, and Trump's visit was canceled. It's not clear to me if Denmark canceled it or the president canceled it. Why Greenland? The Thule Air Base is there. Thule Base is the air base, is the home to the 21st Space Wing's global network. And space, it's got space surveillance and space control to North American Aerospace Defense Group, NORAD, and the Air Force Space Command. So if you're Trump and you want to do a space force, Greenland is something you're quite interested in. In addition, it's clear the president has figured out that starting a war with Iran would cost him the election. So we see a little bit of backpedaling on Iran, but the hope, again, is that economic sanctions are going to squeeze. There's a dirty game going on in Hong Kong. I want to talk more with Farrell about it when we do news trends and stories in September. Trump is clearly concerned about the economy. He wants the Fed to drop interest rates 100 basis points. That's not going to happen. The question is, will they do 25 or 50 basis points in September? I think they're going to drop at max 25 to 50. Keep an eye on the Jackson Hole meeting. The central banker is going to meet. And so maybe Powell gives an indication of what the Fed's thinking is, and or maybe not. We see Trump talking about whether or not he can engineer a capital gains cut through an executive order. It looks like he's backed off of that. I think Congress will feel quite territorial about all of that. Anyway, so if you take a look at what's going on in the White House and the administration, it was clearly deep state month. UPS is now using self-driving trucks, and keep an eye on trucks and autos. The changes in both the makeup of cars and trucks, as well as self-driving, is now going to move out fast and furious, and it's going to be a very dynamic part of the economy. The competition between the European, Japanese, and American car makers is going to continue to become more and more significant. So watch that space. It's going to tell you a lot about automation. And needless to say, if you look at what they're planning with 5G and the data connection, you know, they're going to treat a car as a shopping center, and the amount of data that's going to flow out of that is one of the big driving forces behind the satellite networks. If you look who's who and what's up in the space-based economy, we talked about what a big part of the Internet of Things data flow and the cloud data flow that cars are anticipated to be. So that's going to be a brutal competition, but it's going to accelerate now. It's interesting. I've been talking with one person in Hickory Valley about getting my old Pathfinder refurbished, as I said earlier, this month in Money and Markets, just because I'd rather have a refurbished Pathfinder than a new car. A lot more on the Epstein affair coming out about his will, the raid on the island, but the best comment on Epstein this week was a new video from TrueStream. I can't recommend it enough. It's up at the Salieri Report and in my Twitter feed, where Melissa Dykes does a rant comparing Epstein to this new movie called Bad Boys, which is a real sexualization of children. It's deeply offensive. She points out what the gross was on the first weekend and points out, you know, that the corruption we're seeing with Epstein and his operation is not just at the Epstein level. If you look at the money paid to watch Bad Boys, no healthy society would do that. And Melissa does a great rant and points out, as I've often done, that the swamp is from sea to shining sea. I'm getting constant emails from the investment community on opportunity zones. We did an interview with Patrick Wood a month or two ago on opportunity zones, and there's definitely something going on. I haven't figured it out yet. Patrick and I talked a lot about it, and I keep bringing it up. And I'm getting great feedback from subscribers who are realizing, oh, you know, my home or my second home is in an opportunity zone. What's going on? But something's definitely up. And there's a lot of both interesting data plays and real estate plays in the opportunity zone. So keep that feedback coming, because there's definitely something up. The Business Roundtable came out with a huge announcement, which was pretty shocking. And it's all in the details, so I'm going to look harder in the details. They came out and they said, we don't have to just do what's in the best interest of shareholders. We're going to change everything to the best interest of shareholders and employees and customers and all constituencies. And you thought, what? You know, for years we've heard you had to do shareholders because that was the law. Suddenly the law is not a problem. And you think, what's this all about? So I also think it's part of, you know, a new level of spin, which for me is mostly BS. But it reminds me, I want to finish the write-up on the ESG for the first quarter wrap-up. I have a lot more to say about that. I certainly said a lot in the audio, so the audio's done and in the up at the Salieri Report. Anyway, so what's the Business Roundtable up to? Part of it is we're looking at huge privatization after 2020, and it's up to the Business Roundtable to persuade the American people in particular that they can turn over lots of governmental functions to private corporations and trust private corporations to be strategic in their governance and thinking, which of course is complete BS. Macron, the G7 meeting is coming at the end of August and or shortly. And Boris Johnson's already there. The president's flying over. And Macron France is the host, so Macron is the host. Macron announced before the G7 meeting that there would be no joint communique for as long as I've followed G7, they always come out with a joint communique at the end of the meeting. And at the last G7, they couldn't because you had Trump and Merkel squabbing. And now Macron is just announcing they're not going to even try and do it, which I think is very smart. You know, by not doing it, you can let a free discussion happen without worrying about how you're going to get everybody to agree on a fairly conceptual, abstract communique. Anyway, I came as I was in Europe for the last 6 weeks. All the economists piled up on my den ottoman, and I came back and realized that one of the July economists had a big cover. It said the next 50 years in space. It's really funny. So that was July. What's up in the space-based economy was it last year, first quarter? Anyway, but I thought, it's amazing because if you look at what we did on space in 2013 and then what we did in space last year, I kept getting criticisms, not from subscribers, but from non-subscriber groups. Space, oh, that's so far out there. I don't think it's far out there anymore. Life in the intersection. I'm really looking forward to seeing all the people in Toronto, but one in particular, of course, is Dr. Mark Skidmore. He's going to record a Salier Report with me about sort of knowledge management in a world where you're trying to navigate between reality and the official reality. And I was talking with a client this week, and one of the things I said was, there is an official reality, and then there's a reality. But if you were to draw a circle, one representing reality, the other official reality, there's a portion where the circles intersect. And I said, I was encouraging them, get your kids not to build their career in the official reality. Get them to build their career in the intersection, because they need to be grounded in reality. Otherwise, 20 years from now, you wake up and discover you're the patsy. If you build it in the official reality that doesn't intersect with the reality, then you're not on solid ground. But if you're in the intersection, then if you want to get along with the herd, you can in the intersection, because you're part of the official reality, but you're also standing with your feet on reality. So if you don't feel like bucking the crowd, then live life in the intersection. There is an intersection. Our hero this week are the 9/11 truth leaders. We've seen a lot of action on 9/11, and of course the big one is the fire commissioners in New York coming out and saying the buildings were brought down by internal implosions and not by fires from planes. We're coming into the 9/11 anniversary, and it's quite astonishing to see the number of courageous people who don't give up trying to bring accountability. We now have 9 New York police officers who have been suicided, and it wouldn't surprise me if, in addition to essentially a mob war going on, that relates to what happened at 9/11, and it also relates to the Anthony Weiner laptop. And my guess is NYPD is sort of closer to the side of the angels than the people killing them. I wanted to give a special mention to the CEO of Cathay Pacific Airlines who resigned. The Chinese wanted a list of Cathay Pacific employees who had participated in the protests. And so he returned the list with his name alone on it, refusing, of course, to provide lists of names of anybody else. Very intelligent and courageous act. And unfortunately, central control is going to ruin in Hong Kong one of the greatest economies ever created. And it's very sad to see, but again, more with on Feral when we talk in September. Our interview this week is a great conversation with Thomas Meyer. I love talking with Thomas about all the deepest and most important issues. And I think integrity is a very important issue, and integrity is very much a pathway to access the kind of power we need. And integrity is really a journey, because you can always improve your integrity. Every day I see more opportunity to improve mine, but I absolutely believe that integrity is a critical building block to achieving the power we need. And I found a quote from Marcus Aurelius to put up with this interview that I just love. I've been quoting it all week, and I think it's, boy, it really inspires you on the integrity pathway. He says, "The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane." And I assure you, as you look around, I'm back in the United States, as you look about around the United States and look at the news, the opportunities to join the ranks of the insane abound, but don't do it. And listening to Thomas Meyer can inspire you not to. Our movie this week is Loving Vincent. It's an animation of the life of Vincent van Gogh, and it is the first feature film that was animated through paintings. It's quite remarkable. I saw it. I was flying from Copenhagen to Geneva this spring, and the person sitting next to me was watching it on his laptop, and it was so absolutely astonishingly beautiful. I just took my breath away, and finally I had to stop him, and I said, "I have to know, what is that you're watching?" And he said, "Oh, well, I work for an auction house, and I love art," and he explained to me what it was and how incredible it was. In fact, when I put up the trailer in the commentary, I put up a second video that explains what the production entailed, and it's just astonishing. It's an amazing accomplishment, and it really helps you appreciate Van Gogh and the beauty of his paintings. If you haven't read Nina Hines' Food for the Soul column on our visit to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam this past spring, it's great. She's also just wrote a great one about a digital exhibit they've done on Van Gogh's painting in Paris that we're going to be visiting in September. And anyway, but Loving Vincent, just an amazing, amazing production. Ask Catherine. This one is incredible. This isn't exactly for Ask Catherine, but I hope it gets to the right place. I wanted to bring your attention to the news about ICOM. It's the Museum Association, the International Museum Association, possibly changing the definition of a museum, bringing it in line with Agenda 2030. You sent two links. I hadn't known about this. I really appreciate your sending this tremendously. Oh my God, they're trying to turn the definition of a museum into complete psychobabble. It's as though they're trying to destroy museums. It's incredible. It's such a bunch of it takes my breath away. Anyway, so I sent it to Joseph Farrell. We're definitely going to have to talk about this one in September. Anyway, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you sending that. I hope that doesn't succeed. It's just horrible. On the same subject, I recently watched a truly dreadful movie on Netflix called Down a Dark Hall. The underlying and very blunt message is that girls need to destroy Western culture before it vampires them and destroys them. It's a horror movie, but terrifying for the wrong reasons. You know, this war on Western civilization is just incredible. Anyway, so I will check that out. It sounds absolutely dreadful. I never gave any input about the new website because most of my thoughts were reflected by public comments. What I really miss the most from the old website is the old news trends and stories. I miss the list of links to the articles on the main page. Going into each individual subject is a bit tedious, and I'm no longer in the habit of reading the articles when I have a few minutes to occupy. I agree with you. I still don't like the format. We're trying to figure out how to do it in the right way without having a page that goes on for 50 miles because there are so many articles. And of course, it's very important to us to collect the key stories throughout the 3 months so that we can, we can collect them into the synthesis we do quarterly. Anyway, but I appreciate that. So we're going to go back to work and see if we can't find a way around this to really get news trends and stories back to something as convenient. Because I agree with you, it was much easier for me to just scan them on the homepage. Other than that, I think everything is excellent. I want to thank the entire team for their hard work. While Soleri has changed my perspective on my life in many wonderful and surprising ways, I'm currently especially grateful for the recent interview about iodine. For months, I have been dealing with minor but increasing back pain that has improved dramatically with salt and now iodine, so I couldn't have come at a better time. That's amazing. I can't tell you how many times I had some ailment and I, you know, I have a rule. I cannot go to a healthcare practitioner until I've tried iodine and castor oil pack, because they always almost work, always. And so it's amazing to me what has been healed in my life by iodine. I just think it's kind of a, for me, it's a miracle drug. So I'm glad to hear it worked for you. And I just have to say again, everybody's different. So what works for me may not work for you. CAF, on this week's Money and Markets, I ask you to update us upon several topics you have highlighted in the past and where these are leading. So you mentioned several things. Let me go through them. Back in 2014, after the Secret Space Conference, you and Joseph discussed in some detail how Mr. Global appeared to be in a great big hurry to roll out the full digital control systems. Come September 2015, very important and underreported meetings between the Chinese leadership and U.S.-based technology leadership were held in Seattle ahead of the UN confab. Yes, we talked about those, and those were indeed very important. Finally, in May, just past, numerous key developments occurred, passing of Bart Shilton, resignation of key people's president's working group, SEC, accounting chief, Mr. Hazard, etc., and an important and quickly scheduled meeting called by Secretary Mnuchin. Yes, we talked a lot about that. Interestingly, May 27th was the initiation of a dramatic markup in the price of gold in all key currencies. I have a working hypothesis on where this is headed. That said, I will find it of great value to listen to your hypothesis. Perhaps your Solaria subscribers will find it equally illuminating. You might want to add to this that the J.P. Morgan Chase relatively junior officer just was convicted on the gold manipulation issue. I can't remember. I think it was conviction as opposed to a settlement, but there you have it. You have an official action against a J.P. Morgan Chase agent or officer for manipulating the gold market, which is a sort of a major result. So my question, and I don't think we have enough information yet, so my question is, are they revaluing the gold stores? They've been busy rebalancing them globally. So we've taken the gold inventories and we've been pushing them out, rebalancing them globally. I've always assumed that it was a push for evolving the currency system, but whether or not they're ready to revalue yet, I'm not sure. It could just be you have very bitter, deep, difficult politics globally that's pushing the price up because people are looking for safe haven. So the question is, are they ready to revalue yet? If you get a big revaluation of gold combined with this level of deflation, given the levels of debt, you're into a very painful and ugly period. So I just don't see them conceding to deflation yet, but I just don't think we have enough data points to tell. But it's worth watching. I absolutely, before this is all over, expect a major revaluation of gold. Hello, Catherine. I recently watched Rob Kirby's interview with Greg Hunter. Mr. Kirby gives extensive credit to you and Dr. Skidmore for discovering and widely making known the missing 20 trillion. From what I understand, Mr. Kirby's basic premise is the missing money has been created and will cause inflation. Eric DeCarbonell has talked about superdollars and the danger they pose for hyperinflation if they should ever make their way to the U.S. mainland and enter the domestic economy. My understanding, however, is that the missing 21 trillion has not been and will not be created. That was money that was already in existence and on the books somewhere before they got shifted. Therefore, one can't really talk about them created as new money, which will cause inflation. Or do I have it wrong? Could you please clarify this apparent discrepancy for me? I can come up with explanations where the money was all printed, and I can come up with explanations where instead it was basically stolen around the world. My guess is, looking from the level of securities fraud and what's been going on between the Fed and the Exchange Stabilization Fund, I think a significant amount of it was created, including money that could have been laundered back from the Middle East and, you know, sort of war zones around the world. So I would assume, you should just assume that a portion or all of it was, in fact, created and created quietly and silently. And the question is, you know, it could have been created through the securities fraud, not through Fed action. I wonder if Catherine had already seen this. It was a pension comment. It was referring to a municipality that's issuing a bond deal to fully fund their pension fund obligations. Now, to me, I think this is a more expensive way to fund your pension fund obligations than just doing it, because you have bond fees, you have interest. As interest rates come down, it's going to be very tempting to do it this way, because if you're on the city council or a municipal official, by fully funding through a bond deal, you get the pension fund taken care of, and then you lock the body politic into having to make the payments. Obviously, if you go negative interest rates, it's a no-brainer to fund the pension fund this way. So there may be, to me, it's not preferable because it adds to the expense of financing the pension fund. But I can see why a responsible municipal leader might want to do it. My fear is, you have Wall Street and the bond dealers just ginning up business by persuading people to do this. Catherine, I hope your tour of Europe is as wonderful as it sounds. Yes, it was as wonderful as it sounds. I've enjoyed my time there. It certainly is a wonderful experience in architecture, history, culture, and food. The Italians got all of those right, in my opinion. I was hoping to share more ideas about productivity backlash combined with technocracy and the growth of AI replacement workforce. I have the instinct and agree with you that going local is one of the main ideas to slow these forces. You have suggested, I am paraphrasing, that if enough people vote with their wallets and encouraging growing, buying food, produced locally, banking locally with a credit union, dealing with local businesses with integrity could be a solution. For more rural-based people, this seems to be feasible. Actually, I was just talking to a couple people in different cities, and if you look at their options for small banks and farmers markets, it's really quite good. Let me keep going. I enjoyed your salary reports involving the topics of food production and related non-centralization efforts, including creating a local currency. These ideas seem to be intricately interwoven with each other. With your professional background and being well-read, I'm sure you've heard of the term Luddite. I've attached a link below to the Webb's dictionary for a definition, should you not be aware. The following quote seems to be appropriate. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. Mark Twain. Would you consider the Luddite of the past to be comparable to the modern deplorable? I'm of the opinion that it is. Disruption in an economic system is not easy for those at the bottom to digest. Considering this growth of AI and automation to be the 2.0 version of the Industrial Revolution, how do you see this filling in, creating a human civilization, not ignoring FASB 56, of course? I hope my views are not too incoherent. I have the impression that you've already covered this topic on Soleri in a different context. Here's the issue, and because to me, Luddite is a little bit different than a deplorable, but at different levels of the economic spectrum, the economics of integrating technology is very different. So if you live in a place, as I do, like Hickory Valley, and you're operating, say the average income in our county is, say, $24,000 a year, a lot of technology does not add value. It's expensive. It comes with a surveillance capitalism component, and it doesn't add real productivity. If anything, it wastes your time, and your time is too precious. So my vision going forward, I believe in high culture, high health, high intelligence, and human tech. Tech is technology that makes your human life better, richer. It saves you time, it makes you money, but it increases your humanity. It doesn't drain or harvest it. And I also believe in minimal expense, because I think there is a way to enjoy exceptionally high culture. You can go and get all of a fabulous recording of Beethoven symphonies and download it for free or almost next to nothing. So if you look at the possibilities we have of filling our life with fabulous art, fabulous music, essentially for free, it's amazing. And then if you look at, if we take the time to teach ourselves about nutrition and health, we can stay remarkably healthy at a remarkably small expense. You know, to me, great health is a big, big money saver. But it takes a lot of time. It took me a tremendous amount of time when I couldn't go to a doctor or I'd go to a hospital to have to sit down and figure out what worked and learn. And there's a great, you know, there's a huge body of knowledge that I still have yet to learn. So all these things, high culture, high health, and high intelligence, you can achieve at very minimal expense and pretty much only using technology, which can be not perfect, but relatively human. So I have a vision that's not Luddite and it's not deplorable, but it is, you know, you come to my house and I have a brand new stove that has no digital anything. I have a 40 or 50 year old refrigerator. I had to paint it so that it had just gotten so old looking. It was embarrassing, but I wanted something that was purely mechanical, no digital anything in it. I just think a lot of this, I'm not a Luddite, but to me, technology has to enhance my human life and civilization. And there's an awful lot of technology that doesn't. There's an awful lot of technology that does. So think high, 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 and very, very human. And I think there's a way to achieve what the deplorables and the Luddites were looking to achieve in terms of simplicity and economic sanity, but also enjoy very, very high culture and intelligence at the same time. P.S., your work on deep state tactics is the eye-opener for those that have not experienced what you have. Great intelligence. I had to boldface this. I love this. This info is what makes your difficult to comprehend views comprehensible. Now you understand why I believe in the slow burn. Dear Catherine, here are some random thoughts. The level of entrainment in Canada is off the charts. This for the better part of a decade. It is observed that the large segment of the population becomes highly agitated when exposed to alternative narratives. I suspect a waveform pumped through the electrical grid and into the residential wiring harness. Presumably, declaring Antifa a terrorist organization will cut off its financing. Alive but without a trial, Jeffrey has high value as a bargaining chip. The recent release of his audio tapes is a warning to those who will not trade. The potential is there for a remaking of the U.S. domestic political landscape. Good things are going to happen. In trying to understand why academia is so insane, both educators and administrators, a few weeks ago, I came across a Jordan Peterson, Camille, I think it's Paglia, YouTube interview on the influence of postmodern philosophy in academia. Peterson refers to a book published by Stephen Hicks explaining postmodernism, which I'm listening to via audiobook. Very interesting. Explains a lot about what otherwise seems inexplicable. Okay. Hello, Catherine. I sell folding and gluing equipment for printing, finishing, and have been since 1990. Print has been an awesome leading indicator of future echo activity in my experience. Print is slowing down as big consolidations hit a brick wall with R.R. Donnelly LLC mergers falling through on the print side, along with other failed mergers of couple other companies. Traditional bookbinding continues to shrink and consolidate. Digital is certainly playing a role as long as long run disappear for shorter and variable web to print batching. This is analysis of the last 18 months with focus on Mid-Atlantic and Northeast and Midwest states. All the best to you. This parallels what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a portion of what people are referring to as slowdown is not really a slowdown. It's simply centralization of the activity as automation re-engineers and really sucks the life out of a big part of, you know, different things that are being automated. So, what you're describing is you're seeing all across. And, of course, the one that really concerns me is what happens when trucks and cars go significantly driverless. Like, it's going to take a fair amount of time on cars, but the trucks could go faster, I think, than many people believe. Catherine, hope you're doing well. Just another data point for you. We recently sold our farm in South Central Kansas and have moved to a small acreage in Georgia, about 40 minutes from the Stones. We had a farm auction for the equipment, and all I can say is thank God for the salvage dealer and the used equipment dealers. Most of the equipment sold for 50 cents on the dollar, and the non-equipment bought 5 cents on the dollar. Bottom line, the farmers in our area have no money and look shell-shocked at what they observed. The auction was on Friday. That night was the Tyson fire. Cattle have been limit down ever since. It was a fire in the big Tyson plant out there, and big impact on the market. I told my wife I believe we are lucky to get out when we did. This could really get ugly if there is a land grab, bankrupting all the farms that have any debt. I'm seeing the same thing on my road trip to Canada. You see whole worlds and whole communities and whole foods, whole fields, morphogenic fields dying as the, you know, as the technological sort of reengineering of progress occurs. And with that, a lot of it is coming disaster capitalism and real, I just think real economic warfare, particularly in the rural areas. Okay, that's it for this week. It's relatively quiet. Remember, this is August. Between now and Labor Day in the United States, everybody is still going to want to take their break. There's a real push to get Congress back and shorten up the recess so they can get the new budget done by October 1st. It's going to be a real push to try and get it done. And next week, we have Deep State Tactics Part 5. That's on legal. I just recorded that. I'm in Ohio to record that with my attorney, Carolyn Betts. That's a long one. There's a lot of legal tactics. We only, we could have done a 3-day recording. Then September 5th, A Hero's Journey with Linda Moulton Howe, top serious reporter in the whole UFO issue, spent a lifetime and very brilliant reporter, investigative reporter, who's done amazing things. The woman who termed the coin high strangeness and breakaway civilization. Then September 12th, we have 9/11 with Niels Harrit, the Danish scientist who has really gone into the deep dive on the explosion. He talks this time with Thomas Meyer about, and I was present for the interview, so I'm sort of a third B. He talks a little bit about NATO and sort of what happened with the war on terrorism being adopted by NATO during the 9/11 period. And so great lineup. Deep State Tactics Part 5, then A Hero's Journey with Linda Moulton Howe, and then 9/11 with Niels Harrit and Thomas Meyer. So that's it for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.